With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to the MMA Fan Podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, I give you Stu and Blake.
Hello. Before we start this episode of the MMA Fan Podcast, we need to tell you about our sponsor, Free Train. Free Train do these fantastic running vests for you to run in, hit the bag in, and they keep your phone close to your chest. No more do you need to have your phone rumbling around in your pocket when you run or at an awkward angle on your arm. You can keep it on your chest with easy access to your phone whenever you go training. And what can the people do, Stu, if they want to get a vest?
Simple. Head over to www.freetrain.com. Have a look. See what you like. And when you pop it in the basket, just before you check out, pop in the code MMAFAN and save yourself 10%. I mean, don't ever let it be said we don't spoil you here on this podcast. www.freetrain.com. Go check them out.
Excellent stuff. Right, on with the show.
Hello and welcome to the MMA Fan Podcast. I'm Blake Harrison.
I'm Stu Whiffin. How you doing today, Blake?
Very good, mate. Very good. I got up early and had a workout. Look at me. Amazing.
I mean, you've already told me this before we press record because you wanted
now
some kind of
listeners.
Like affirmation for this early morning. I mean, I didn't even tell you that I had a run this morning. It was a very foggy run this morning, but didn't make a big deal about it. Didn't want any kind of pat on the back, but it was the first thing you said when the Zoom chat opened, and it's the first thing you've said when we press record. Well done, mate.
Thank you. And I'm sure our listeners are saying well done as well. I got up at 6 a.m. and I had a workout before taking the kids to school. I'm proud of myself, you know?
Yeah.
I've achieved something today.
Yeah.
You know? I'm really proud. What? There's nothing wrong with that.
No, it's not. It's a great start to the day. Oh, dear. Right, today's episode, it's a good one.
Don't do that.
No,
again.
That's no. I can't
no,
go there.
Don't do
no, that was last
again.
Week's episode. I genuinely meant this is a good one, like a good one. I'm being hounded for my my John Gooden joke, and only to be eclipsed by you. You done some howlers. Was it you that was dishing
How
out the hat?
Dare you? I was on fire. I was on fire.
I thought it was mixed reviews, to be honest.
I can't even remember which jokes we're talking about now. But
it was close. It was your close gag.
No, that was Pip.
What
that was
it?
Pip. That was Pip's close but no Dakar.
That's right.
That was, which I loved it. I thought I was banging for it. I'm proper up there with the dad jokes. And, you know, I'm basically Phil Dunphy from Modern Family is my hero. So any terrible joke, I am all for it. But yeah, no. So let's get on to this week's episode. This week's episode, or this episode, is with the brilliant Ben Shepherd. And we are looking at the absolutely amazing fight from, I think, back in 2016. It was at UFC 206, which was the main fight on that card was Holloway versus Pettis, but that is not the fight we are looking at. We're looking at a fight that wasn't even the co-main event that night, I think. We are looking at Cub Swanson versus the Korean Superboy, Doo-ho Choi. And oh my God, it is one of my favorite fights of all time. It has everything. If you haven't seen Cub Swanson versus Do Ho Choi. Go back and find it. I looked up on the BT Sport app where they've got all the UFC coverage at the moment. You can go back to try and find some old cards. And if you go to 206 and you find the 206 card, you can fast forward that and get to the Cub Swanson Do Ho Choi fight. Or it is special.
And if that hasn't wet your whistle, go and find it. By the time you get to the end of this episode, there's three men absolutely losing their minds over this fight. So once you finish, go and do what Blake said. Go and watch it, because I can't recommend it enough. It just doesn't come off the gas right from the first bell. It's just an absolute, it's scraptastic. It really, really is. Should we just get on with the episode and we'll jump back on at the end?
Let's do it. Ben, how's it going?
Hey, good. Blake, Stu, nice to see you both. How are we doing?
Good.
Very, very
all
good,
good,
mate. So, I mean, the way we normally start this is by asking our guests what was their idea of MMA, mixed martial arts, before watching the fight, because I'm assuming you hadn't seen too much in the past.
I've watched bits here and there, and obviously when Conor McGregor was making all those headlines, I saw a fair bit of his stuff. And what's his name? Mm-hmm. Bisping.
Yes, yeah.
A few years back, yeah. That wasn't it? So when I was at university, I left university in 1997. So in the mid-90s, a few of my mates that were professional rugby players, because we were at University of Birmingham, they started watching a fair bit of MMA and were quite sort of taken with it. And the fact that you had grapplers and strikers and bits and pieces like that. And I remember watching a bit of it. And I really love my boxing. I'm a huge boxing enthusiast. I'll always watch the boxing when it's on. So the idea of sort of no holds barred fighting seemed quite exciting. So I've dipped in and out over the years. And I've got some friends that are very passionate about it, like you, Blake. I was speaking to Lee Mack about it the other day and a couple of others. And they love their MMA. And every now and again, I'll come to it and I'll watch a little bit. And then for one reason or another, it jars with me a little bit. Some of the excessive violence, like the end of this fight. I mean, what an incredible fight, by the way. Yeah. I know we're going to come on to it. But the end of this fight, that's the bit that I struggle with a little bit. You know, before the ref can jump in and stop them being clobbered to bits on the floor. I mean, when they can't defend themselves. But from an athletic perspective, from a sort of the technician's execution of skill and ability, it's just mind-blowing. It's like watching a video game at times, isn't it? And trying to understand that, you know, I like to keep myself fit and I like to do a lot of training, and I've done some boxing and I had a bout as well, but trying to understand the level of their knowledge and skill to be able to do all the different elements, that's what I'm really attracted to, just what extraordinary specimens they are.
And just to touch on something you said there about you'd boxed a bit and you'd had a bat. Was that something that was offered to you when you was like a child, to like go and toughen up and look after yourself, go and join a boxing club? Or was that something just as the athlete in you wanted to try something new as an older man?
Yeah, it's exactly that, Stu. I would have loved to have boxed as a kid, but it just wasn't really what my family did. I grew up on the edge of East London and my family were all rugby players, so it was football and rugby throughout my upbringing. Boxing and fighting and any of that sort of stuff. Did a bit of karate, but that was a bit average. I seem to remember just going up and down a village hall, pointlessly kicking things at the air. I think it was. Didn't get to kick anyone. That was frustrating. I would have loved to box. So it was when I sort of started working in telly. So I ended up doing it for sport relief. So I did the sport relief bouts. And I absolutely loved it. And I'd started boxing anyway. I'd started going to boxing clubs and I fell in love with training in a boxing gym specifically as well. Just how down to earth and real it was. No frills. You know, the smell was awful. The damp was awful. The sweat was awful. But the people were just the absolutely amazing and welcoming. And it didn't matter who you were, where you're from. And I loved that. And you're absolutely right. It was about testing myself physically. That's what I really wanted to try, which is how I was drawn
and
to it.
You said physically there. Can I just, whenever we ask fighters on, we always talk about that moment before they come out and make the walk and the ring walk, and then obviously the bell rings. Now, obviously, Ben, you know, you seem like a confident person whenever I watch you on the TV and stuff like that, and you've played in other sports at, you know, decent levels. How was you with controlling the mental side of what was about to happen when you got in the ring and then all of a sudden it is just you, the ref, and someone that wants to take your head off?
The other thing that's the mental challenge was by far the toughest, because all my life, like I think sort of probably 98% of the population, if trouble starts brewing, you move away from it. You walk away, right? You get away. It's like, don't get involved. My parents had always said, if anything's happening, make sure you take yourself out of that situation. And you're suddenly in a position whereby, and I really struggled with this in sparring initially as well, apologising to the opponent because I kept hitting them. Because it was, you know, is that I was just too polite. I was just like, oh, God, I'm really sorry. Was that a bit hard? You know, and it only takes a couple of them clocking you back a couple of times. So you think, okay, well, I get it now. You can just clump each other. But it was, you know, you have to combat that instinct that had been groomed into me by my parents and my peers and my teachers for years, whereby as the fight is escalating, you go towards it rather than move away from it. So what I was finding was initially when I was sparring, if I was sparring with somebody, it happened on a couple of occasions, somebody who was better than me and stronger than me, when I first started, really what you want to do is get closer to them. I mean, it's not MMA, so you're not grappling, so that's fine. Because if you get closer to them, you're getting out of range because it's much harder for them to get you. But I was sort of walking away, and I was just keeping myself at perfect range for them to keep smashing me in the face. And it was that counterintuitive feeling of, no, I've got to go towards this. I've got to go towards the danger. I've got to take myself forward. I've got to confront that. And from a mental perspective, that was an incredible experience, putting myself in that sort of environment and knowing that I had to do that. I mean, you know, as Blake will tell you, I'm a very competitive person, and I really, when I do something, I want to do it wholeheartedly. I've got no concerns about looking an idiot because I've got no experience. You know, football is a great example of that. I'd rather run around and have an amazing time than worry about what people think about how good I am at football or not. It's not about that. It's just all about enthusiasm and endeavour. And it was similar with the boxing. I just wanted to soak up every experience. So the one thing that I did do that was really important to me, because there was certain things that I couldn't control. I couldn't control how good my opponent was. I had no control about his experience. I was fighting Lamar, not the Lee Sin of Kajagoogoo, Lamar. I was fighting Lamar, who I knew very well, actually, and sort of, you know, had interviewed many times over the years. So, but I couldn't control anything about how fit he was, his boxing experience, and all those things. The only thing I could control was how fit I was and how much I wanted it. And I knew that I would undoubtedly want it more than him, and I would be fitter than him, because I wouldn't leave anything to chance, because they were the things I could control. So interestingly, and I think it's one of the only times in my life, and I think professionally as well, that when the night came for the fight itself, even though it was at BBC and it was in front of cameras and stuff, I was really calm because I knew that I had literally done everything I possibly could. There was nothing I hadn't done. I hadn't sort of backed out of a training session. I hadn't done the run first thing in the morning. I hadn't looked after my diet because I fancied a little bit of something. I took it really, really seriously, like really seriously, because I wanted that experience. It's a little bit like us with Soccer Aid Blake, isn't it? You want the experience. I know we're playing at it, but you want the experience of feeling like a professional athlete. If I could have done anything in my life, it would have been a professional athlete. Whatever, I don't know what the sport was. I just love it. So to get that chance, I didn't want to leave anything out there. I didn't want anything to come to chance. So if he was a better boxer than me, that's fine. I could deal with that. As it turns out, he wasn't. And I smashed him. But it was the most brilliant, visceral experience of my life. It's one I think about still to this day. And if I could take myself back there and do it again, I'd do it in a heartbeat. And I loved how intense it was. I just loved everything about it. The smell, my eyesight seemed completely alert. My senses were just on fire. Everything about the experience. The one thing I couldn't control at all was time. You know, it was, they were, I think we did 3 2-minute rounds, and the time, it's just, I'd love to go back and try and relive it again. Because you want in your head, you want to try and box like a proper boxer. And of course, we were just throwing windmills at each other. It's like handbags outside the nightclub in Romford on a Friday night. But it was just the most remarkable experience. And then I didn't stop boxing for a long time after that. I never had another bout, but I didn't stop boxing because I thrived in that environment. I really felt like I was pushing myself out of my comfort zone, making myself confront certain restrictions that had been put on me because, you know, we grow up in a life whereby, you know, you are polite to people, you respect people, you don't go towards danger and you don't find confrontation. And it wasn't suddenly like I was walking along the street trying to offer people out or anything like that. It's just I wanted to be in an environment. I wanted to be in an environment where I had to test myself.
I've got a great image of you just wandering down the street and people being like, Ben Shepherd just asked me for a fight. Some random bloke's like, what the, just asked me for a fight.
Yeah.
I saw Ben Shepherd in Romford High Street wearing boxing gloves, just randomly starting on people.
He's got some chalk and he just draw a ring in the road. Like, he's mental. Ben Shepherd's mad.
I mean, you talk about the complexities of like wanting to get in closer, you know, to get out of range, but you can't help but, you know, want to get on the back foot, jab and move away from that, you know, and that's, I totally agree, that's a natural way to approach these things. Mm. So just to move it now back onto MMA, not only are you just, as you said, your vision was like completely on the money and you've just got these two hands to worry about. When they get in that octagon, their legs are being kicked, their head's being kicked, their body's being kicked, they're being elbowed, they're being kneed, and then that's without even worrying about being taken down. And so it's just so many more elements to kind of process. Yeah. And I think this fight demonstrates so many of them elements. And Blake, do you want to introduce the listeners to the fight that we're going to talk about?
Well, we've got Cub Swanson versus Duho Choi. I think it was UFC 207. I know it took place in Toronto, and you can really hear the crowd at points. It really, what we've had. I don't know, because if you're watching a lot of boxing at the moment, Ben, I don't know if you're having a similar thing, but with the UFC and MMA in general, the majority of the fights over the last year or so have been to no crowd, which has been fascinating in some ways. Like, Hearing the corner, hearing the fighters talk to each other has been pretty special at times. But also, one of the amazing things that's happened is in a couple of incidents, we've heard fighters hear the commentary, and that has aided them in getting a victory. There's one or two of them that have thanked one of the commentators, who's also an ex-champion, because he said, I overheard him talking about what he was doing with the wrestling, and I slightly changed my approach to that. And the commentator had to sort of apologise, but he said, I can't do anything about it. He said, my mind's a cheat code. What can I do? I think it was 207. I'm not 100% sure, but I think it was 207. And, oh, my God, what an absolutely fantastic... It's one of, if not my favourite fights, because it's got both the determination and that kind of the durability of some of the other fights we've done, Stu, like the McDonald Lawler fights, but also it's got just such technique. That's with the featherweights and all that. You've got the speed, the technique of, you know, what we had in maybe the Adesanya Gastelum fight as well. I mean, it just has absolutely everything. And I think also, until maybe the last 30 seconds of the third round, that fight is up for grabs.
100%.
I really think it's flowing back and forth, and it's up for grabs for the last 30 seconds. And that, to me, is just so incredible. And I got goosebumps even thinking about it now, because I only watched it earlier today to remind myself how brilliant it was. And I was like, this is so fucking incredible. We're talking spinning back fists. There's a cartwheel kick at one point. He hits him with a cartwheel kick.
It's like I was watching Street Fighter. I was like, what buttons does he just press? There's a teenager somewhere controlling him when he did a cartwheel kick.
It's just amazing. But Ben, I think you mentioned to me that you watched it with your sons. Is that right?
Yeah.
So how was that? Yeah. And how old are your boys? And how was that as an experience watching it with the family? And was there any moments where you went, oh, should I be letting my kids watch? Just because I have that. I mean, my kids are a bit younger and I will be watching the UFC or Bellator. My kids are 7 and 4 and they will watch some bits and I don't mind them watching some bits, but then there's some points in the fight where I have to distract them with something or pause it or whatever. Like, I'm teaching my daughter a little bit of jiu-jitsu at the moment, just minor stuff, because I only know a little bit myself. So I was teaching her a little bit. So when there's a grappling exchange, I'm trying to pause it and go, see this, you know, they're trying to do that, and oh, they're trying to go in for the choke there, and she's fighting the hands and all that kind of stuff, which is always fun and is interesting to show her that stuff. But how was it for you watching it with your boys, maybe not knowing what to expect?
We like watching boxing together, and we've watched some pretty big boxing matches, contests. And my eldest Sam is nearly 16 and my youngest is 14. So they're sort of, you know, they're right in the sweet spot where their mates are talking about this sort of thing. And I said I was doing the podcast and I said, I've got to watch this fight. Do you want to watch it with me? And they were like, yeah, definitely. And of course, as soon as it starts, you're gripped. I mean, it is an extraordinary fight, like an extraordinary fight in so many ways. Like, not, I've not seen an MMA fight like that before, UFC. It was the perfect fight to show someone who's sort of a little bit, sort of, disparaging is not the right word, I don't know what it is, a little bit nervous about getting into it. Because there was, I mean, like I said, the technique, the range of skills that were on show, that Korean fighter was a little bit like watching Rocky taking on even Drago, right? Because you've got the Rocky character, who's a bit of a maverick, who's a bit sort of all over there, throwing punches everywhere. And then you've got Ivan Drago, who is just a machine. Yeah. And you can punch him and he's just going to keep coming at you. So the technique of the Korean fighter, it was... I could see it and I could hear the commentators talking about it. And we were talking about that with the boys, with the kids. And it swung both ways as well, that fight. I mean, I don't know what that Korean lad's chin was made of. I can't believe he would still stood... and the other one, the other fella, Cobb, was all flair and skill and, you know, throwing punches from all over the show. And the boys really enjoyed it. But there is a moment every now and again where it's just so brutally graphic. Yeah. And that's the bit that I still... But the great thing is, you know, they're teenagers, so we can talk about that and say, how do you feel about that? And my eldest, who's nearly 15, is a bit calmer than the other one, although he's enormous. He's sort of like, yeah, I'm not really sure. I quite like all that. And the 14-year-old was like, oh, no, it's brilliant, Dad. Look, it's brilliant. Look, he's getting stuck in it. Because that's what the little one wants to do, to his big brother all the time. I think if I could go back and train as a teenager or a young mid-20s with not a middle-aged man's back, I would absolutely love to train in MMA. Because the idea of being able to grapple, that sort of strength, because me and my mates would do it. I play a lot of rugby, and there's a lot more of that now. And I think that's such a sort of a powerful part of your strength and fitness. But then they add in, what I can't do is I can barely touch my toes, let alone do a spinning cartwheel kick or high kick or whatever. You know, I literally am, I'd be like a giraffe on ice trying to throw any sort of kick. It'd be awful. But it's great. And I think, much like you and your daughter, though, Blake, I'm really enjoying sharing these moments, these sporting moments with my two, and sharing that passion and talking through, because I want them to aspire to be fit and strong and healthy and athletic, and we can talk about, I mean, they're 3 5-minute rounds. I mean, 5 minutes is forever. Like, it is forever. It's just miraculous that they have that strength and that well of fitness to go to keep punching, to keep kicking, to keep grappling, to keep their defense up. Because as soon as they stop, the opening's there, one of them will pounce on the other
one. I think it was in the third round when they were clinching that, I think it was Cobb, actually, the commentator said he's just looked up at the clock, because he must have just been thinking, come on, like, this round is never ending. And, I mean, we should talk about the second round, because for me that was just ridiculous. It was, people talk about the Hagler Hearns and these incredible rounds of just brutality of, like, right, he's been knocked out. No, he's been knocked out. And it was just, like, as you said, it was anyone's fight, Blake.
Yeah, I mean, before we get into that, just say it was UFC 206, the Holloway Pettis fight. So for anyone that wants to quickly pause this and check out the fight, it was UFC 206. And
it won't be a quick pause because you're going to be watching the whole thing. You won't be able to stop.
Oh, man, it's so good. But, yeah, I mean, round one I gave to Choi. I thought Choi just landed with the bigger strikes. And, I mean, what was amazing, because at first I forgot that it was in Toronto. I thought it was in America. And they were chanting Do Ho Choi. And I was like, hang on a minute. Like, why? Because Cubs loved in America. I mean, you get no prizes to guess where he comes from. He's got SoCal tattooed on his chest and a bunch of palm trees on his stomach. So, I mean, I thought I was surprised. Then I overheard him say, oh, with Toronto. I was like, oh, yeah, of course. So that's fine. But, and also in round one, one thing that I just thought, one of the other things I love about the sport and the imagination and the creativity that comes with MMA and the types of striking of people like Cub Swanson, who I've just always been a massive fan of, is he was getting clinched up against the fence. And I don't know if you noticed, he was heel kicking Do Ho Choi's calf. It was, yeah. I've never seen it before. And I forgot that. I was like, this is so weird. He's wrapping his leg around him and heel kicking his calf. Just as, and I mean, something like that is, to me, it would be like, ow, that really fucking hurts. But to an athlete, it's probably just a minor irritation. But I suppose he's still looking active in front of the judges, even though he's not actually in control of the position, stuff like that. And I love the imagination of some fighters just going, do you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to kick you in the calf with my heel from the clinch up against the fence. And then, as you say, round two is when really all hell breaks. Cub seems to have really woken up and just absolutely goes for him in round two. And that's when we get that cartwheel kick. And Cub looks like he's having fun, because he lands that cartwheel kick, stops and pokes his tongue out and starts laughing. And then he does like a kind of like wavy thing with the right hand and throws out a jab with the left hand. He's like, oh, he's feeling himself. He's really feeling himself.
And at that point, I'm sitting with the boys going, see, I don't like all that stuff.
Oh, really?
Because for me, and I know he's playing to the crowd, but to me, all that flash stuff, that's when I think, like, come on then, Joy. Let's do a nice combination and put him on his ass. Just get him to take... Because, I mean, clearly, that's when he's at his best, though, because I think you described it brilliantly. It's the creativity of what he was doing and where he was doing it from. It was ridiculous. I mean, it was ridiculous. It was like watching two brothers practicing some crazy fighting in the basement and trying something ridiculous. But he was doing it on that stage.
Yeah.
So, sort of, you know, there's the admiration for the audacity, but also, you know, the respect the professional sportsman in them that kind of feels like, well, that feels a bit disrespectful that he was doing the old, here's this hand, and then, but fair play to him, it worked at that stage, it worked. Yeah. So then Choi gets back into it though, doesn't he? And that, you know, because he was just rigorous with his technique. None of it was out the window, none of it was it was just straight down the line. I thought that the commentators, I was a bit annoyed by the commentators in the first round, because I thought that they were so on Cub Swanson's side. They were ignoring how effective the Korean lad was, because it was...
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win. And also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Just, you know, it was, they made it sound a bit boring, but it was just so...
It was really well measured as well. It was like, it was precise, like hands. It was
exactly that. It was surgical, wasn't it? It was really impressive. And they were, he kept talking about, is it Joe Rogan? Was it Joe Rogan?
Joe Rogan, yep.
He kept talking about going from here and going from there, and this is what he does, and it's all that sort of stuff. And I'm like, for me, I was watching it thinking, he's lost by the razzmatazz of Cub Swanson, when actually this... watching this fighter was really impressive, who wasn't losing. And then that second round was a different thing. How did he not get knocked over? Like, I genuinely was watching him take those punches, the Korean lad, and I said, his chin's got to be made of granite. It was, I mean, how do you train for that? The punches and the kicks he was taking, and he wasn't buckling. He was stumbling a little bit, but he barely got knocked over till the very, very end.
Because it wasn't just standing in front of each other and striking. It was the thing with Swanson was, I don't think he threw hardly any jabs like Cub. I think as soon as, like as I say, Choi was being quite measured and was throwing jabs and was throwing straight rights, but Cub would just do this like run across the octagon, just throwing. And so he was on the back foot running backwards and being clumped and still didn't go over. And you try running back was being punched in the face by a UFC professional. That's no easy thing to stay on your feet with. And
especially not when it is landing also the kicks, the spinning back fists and stuff like that as well, that have just got that extra pop on them. Mm. You're like, Jesus, his chin,
but
as
it's that,
you say,
and it's
is unbelievable.
That point, though, it's that what was interesting, and this is what I was appreciating more and more as the fight went on, was that no matter what angle or direction Cub Swanson was in, he found a way to throw out some sort of ammunition of some sort. So he would suddenly have his back to Choi, and it'd suddenly be turning around and hitting with the spinning back fist or whatever. Suddenly he was throwing a kick, or suddenly he turned a cartwheel into a kick. You know, it was the creativity of that, the ingenious audacity of it, was extraordinary to watch. I mean, it genuinely was like he was being controlled by a PlayStation controller by a teenager somewhere in their bedroom. It was genuinely miraculous watching that. Because I think the fights I've seen in the past have all been a bit more strikey, a few kicks here and there, and they end up grappling and they're rolling around on the floor. And I've not really done that grappling, but you can see how draining that is and how, you know, you're getting into the positions. That's what you're talking about, Blake. How sort of crucial that can be to sort of getting someone to tap out. But it was, it was extraordinary. It was like watching a film, a movie, or a video game.
And one of the things in the third round I thought was really interesting was just how good Cub Swanson is at kicking off the front leg. Like, to throw them big kicks from the back legs a lot easier than to throw off the left. And he would literally just throw them in succession as well. But what I think that left him open to, which I thought was Choi's shot of choice, was an overhand right. He threw some incredible overhand rights that they were the ones that really troubled Cub, I thought. And then also when
Cub was knackered at the start of the third as well, you could really
massively
tell he was very tired. And big, what I also love as well, you know I'm a big fan of this, dude. Cub bowed to him at the start of the third. And I'm such a big, I just love that. I get full friggin' Danny LaRusso Karate Kid vibes, and I'm like, oh, I love it. Give him a bow and then get on with it. Like, I just love that. I thought it was so good.
Full Danny LaRue Mother Goose vibes. That's a different sort of performance. Bowing to the genie. No, you're right. And that's when I thought, because that was at the end of the second round where Cub had been a little bit audacious, a little bit flash. And it was kind of like, by that point, they got to the third round. It was like, okay, this boy's taken everything I've got. He's still standing. Yeah. He's still ready to go. You know, hats off to him. He's a real.
And it's really weird because you've just said this boy, Blake said this lad, and Joe Rogan said this kid. Choi looks like a child. He.
Yeah. Oh my goodness! Yes.
But he's 25. 25 during that fight.
My 14-year-old was like, "Daddy can't be much older than me. Has he been through puberty yet?" I mean, you're absolutely right. He looks so young.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think for MMA, to be at that level at that age, I think that is still relatively young. I think it's getting younger and younger as we're going on now, because people are becoming more, they're training earlier in all disciplines and as a mixed martial artist rather than training as a kickboxer or a wrestler and then transitioning over. There's a lot more people actually now training as mixed martial artists from an early age. Paddy Pimblett, I think, is a good example of that. I know he did a lot of jiu-jitsu, but he seemed to be training from a very early age as a teenager for mixed martial arts. But yeah, I mean, he was something special. His chin was just incredible. And then I think at the start of the third, as I said earlier, Cub looks knackered and Choi's all over him. And you think, well, I've got this 1-1 and this could go any way. And then it's from the middle of round three where Cub really starts to take over for me. And it was, I can't remember what strike landed. I think he went for another cartwheel kick that didn't quite land. But the hip toss, which is something you don't see much in MMA. Like, you get trips, you get takedowns, you get that. But a proper, like, judo-style hip toss, almost like what you'd get in, like, old-fashioned WWF wrestling matches and stuff. And that was pretty special. And the crowd just roared at all of those moments, which was amazing.
And just that kind of versatility at that point, to be so exhausted and then be threatened, still trying to mix it up and trying to kind of catch the judges' eye. And, and I think then that led to the spinning back fist, which, for me, kind of definitely won him that fight. That spinning back fist and then just unloaded, didn't he, at the end. And I just thought, I think Cubs nicked that.
Yeah, well, I think it was the last 30 seconds.
It was the entire back catalogue, wasn't it? You kind of got the impression that because he got pushed so hard, he went to every single crazy, ridiculous, audacious, maverick move he's ever had in the back catalogue that he's used in training, maybe he's used in fights before. Everything came, like a whole box of tricks was used, and that's what he needed to win the fight. Am I right in saying, because as you know, I'm not an aficionado, but he was the favourite. Cub Swanson was the favourite going into that.
Well, I can't remember what kind of streak Du Ho Choi was on, but he was ranked 11th, Cub was ranked 4th, both of which have kind of fallen off since that fight, really.
Have they?
Well, yeah, I mean, we were just discussing this before you came on the call, Ben. We were chatting about, like, where is Du Ho Choi now? Because he lost to a guy called Jeremy Stevens, who now is kind of, you know, he got into a bit of controversial situation the other night because he was supposed to be the co-main event of a fight on Saturday night, Jeremy Stevens. And in the face-off, the guy he was fighting had his hands behind his back, very relaxed. And in the face-off, they got very close to each other and Jeremy Stevens shoved him incredibly hard and the guy suffered a form of whiplash and the fight had to be cancelled. So it was very bizarre.
So he's put his hands behind it, so he can't control his fall or anything like that.
He
kind of flew backwards, but didn't actually go over. He stayed standing up, but I think they're saying that his neck kind of whipped right back. And there's been a bit of a weird thing, because MMA fan base in general can be quite brutal. So there's been a lot of like, oh, well, if you got pushed and couldn't make the fight, how would you have done in the fight? Blah, blah, blah. But then there's other people out there going, well, hang on a minute. If you're not ready for the kind of level of impact that someone who's a strong bloke, especially after doing the weight cut as well, the weight cuts in MMA are far more brutal than the weight cuts in boxing. I mean, again, just referencing Paddy Pimblett, who we had on the show a while back, he was talking about cutting 18 pounds overnight. It's all water weight. They diet down and then dehydrate themselves to dangerous levels to make the weight for fights. It's probably one of the worst things about the sport of MMA. It comes, I think, more from wrestling. Obviously not pro wrestling, but the proper kind of Olympic level amateur wrestling stuff, where they, to get an advantage in the size, they cut loads of water weight up to the weigh-ins and then they rehydrate so that they're as big as possible and they're fighting a guy hopefully smaller than them that can't cut weight like they do. But obviously, when someone's done that, they've depleted, they're not quite ready for it, and they get a huge shove that is going to affect them, and it unfortunately did affect him, and the fight had to be cancelled. But Du Ho Choi lost to him and then to a guy called Charles Jourdain, who had another excellent fight recently. But again, I think he's unranked at the moment. So you're kind of thinking, well, what's going on? And Swanson's been around a long time now.
To give that some sort of context in regards to coming into this fight, Cub Swanson was a bit of a fan favourite. He'd fought in a lot of big fights. And I think this was am I right in saying, Blake, probably the first big fight that Choi obviously was...
It was his biggest fight at that point.
Definitely. And then obviously he took full advantage of that moment and stamped himself on the... You know, that was the fight that everyone was talking about, wasn't it? It was ridiculous. I mean,
oh,
well, did it go, am I saying, was it fight of the year? Looking at the sum of it, it was nominated fight of the year? Or
it definitely would have been nominated fight of the year. Whether it did win fight of the year or not, I'm not exactly sure. I'd have to look it up. But it definitely would have been nominated fight of the year, for sure. I'm just trying to think what else was in that year. Where were we? It was... that was 2016, so I can't remember... To be fair, could that have been a Robbie Lawler year?
It could have been.
That might have been a Lawler McDonald in 2016, which is a very different fight from a technical standpoint, but in terms of brutality, yeah, durability, and just, oh, these two guys, a back and forth moment or two. I mean, I prefer this fight. I think this is a better fight. But that fight as well was five rounds and was for the belt. Because that's the thing with MMA. It's a three-round fight unless you are... Yes. The main event, it's a five-round. Or if it's for the belt, you're a five-round. So that's...
Five rounds?
Yeah, five-minute rounds.
25 minutes?
Yeah. There's just another level of just craziness. I mean, pain. And if you're really interested, Ben, I did this with Lee, because Lee said he wanted a short fight. So I sent him two heavyweights and it was over in 4 minutes. But I've sent him this, the fight I sent you as well, because he said, oh, well, maybe I would be interested in something else. And if you're interested, I can send you a link to what I think is possibly even better than this. But it's a five-round fight and it is, oh, it's something special.
Oh, no, definitely send it. I'll have a look, for sure.
So after seeing this scrap, Ben, do you think then, sort of moving forwards... If you see that, because we've noticed that the UFC is obviously the premiership, but the organisation under that is called Bellator, and they've just added that onto the BBC iPlayer. You can watch them for free on the iPlayer now. If you start to kind of pick up that there's some big fights, are you going to be sort of tempted to get stuck in there?
Yeah, undoubtedly. I think what I really like as well, it's a shame that you say that these two boys have sort of drifted away a bit. Because what I really like is finding a fighter and then following that fighter and seeing how they're doing. And I think that's, you know, when you see a fighter that you really like their style as well, you can see them sort of how their career progresses. That's definitely something I will keep an eye on. And, you know, undoubtedly, it's a big business, isn't it? I mean, it's having a huge impact on the world of boxing as well, the whole UFC thing. Undoubtedly, I think it's about sort of, I enjoy the... I think the thing that I don't like is the absolute graphic brutality at the end of rounds and moments when the person's on the floor and the ref can't get in the way, you know. And that, you know, I understand that's the way it's always been. The ref doesn't get there in time to stop someone getting absolutely drilled, which happens at the end of this fight until the bell goes, doesn't it? Mm. And Cub Swanson jumps on him and he just starts hammering his face. And look, I know that Cub Swanson's got absolutely very little left yet, but he's still pummeling the guy's face on the floor.
Yeah.
So that I struggle with still, because I kind of, you know, that's just innate within me. But what I love and what I absolutely admire is their technical gifts and ability and the athleticism that they show, the prowess that they show, the durability. I think lots of you talk about the durability and the relentless nature that they just keep coming. And that's incredibly admirable, isn't it? It's just a bit bonkers, really. I mean, just, you know, stay on the floor, have a little rest.
Well, the two most important things that we always ask guests, and you may well have done this then, we always ask fighters, guess what their fighter name would be. Did you have one when you boxed?
Yeah, I did. Steve Bunce came up with a much better one. Well, not a much better one, but a good one. And he thought I should have been Ben What the Flock Shepherd, which I still think works very nicely. But I went with something a bit more close to my heart. So I was I'm a West Ham fan, so it was
nice,
the Hammer.
Nice. And
what did you walk down to the ring to?
So, and I took a long time over this as well, but I ended up walking down to the Foo Fighters Pretender.
Nice.
And do you know the words to Pretender?
I looked
them up because I knew you'd ask me. And the chorus goes, what if I say I'm not like the others? What if I say I'm not just another? You're the pretender. What if I say I'll never surrender? And that's the chorus. And it just sort of, I was singing that over and over in my head as I was walking to the ring, and that sort of certainly got me in the mood.
You should have come out to Too Shy by Kajagoogoo. That would have really fucked with his head.
Yeah, I know. One of my mates did say, you've got to get a Lamar song in there if there's any justice in the world, something like that. But it was, yeah, it was an extraordinary experience. But I sort of, you know, I've still got the gloves from that fight. I've still got them at home, and I've got a book of pictures from it as well, and I look on with a great deal of pride about what I did, and what that night was like.
I bet that's amazing, mate. I'm slightly envious of you, to be honest. I kind of feel like that is what an incredible thing to have done, especially if you've been a fan of the sport for a long time, and you take it so seriously in the training and what. Because that's the thing for me is I'm always desperate to get a like an acting role where they're like, right, guys, we're going to do like a 6-week boot camp for like as if you're doing like SAS training or come on, guys, we're doing like some kind of mixed martial arts movie and you've got to go and do. Because to be honest, I got into a little bit, just a tiny bit of like kickboxing training because I did a show that required me. It said in the brief, like, I would need to have some martial arts training. So when I got it, having had no real martial arts training, I was like, well, fuck, I'm going to get on this then. And I went down to an MMA gym and I did a bit of kickboxing and all that. In the end, I did one front kick the whole shoot and that was it. And I was like, mate, I could have probably done that anyway. But what it did do is kind of make this passion I had for the sport as a fan a kind of tangible thing to actually train in and do. And after I did that project, I did keep it going for a while. But, you know, I suppose...
It gives you a much better insight, doesn't it?
Oh,
because suddenly
massively.
You've got to, you know, because we can sit on the sidelines and say, oh, why did you do that? Why did you do that? Why did you do that? That's rubbish. He's too slow. She's not doing this properly, whatever. But until you get in the ring and you get a sense of just how strategic any sort of combat sport is, you're looking for that opening. You get a much better understanding of the strategy involved and much more respect for the skill of those people. It's, you know, as much as we all say, yeah, you just want them there trading blows and stuff, you get those fights every now and again. The ones that I sort of really love watching are watching a fighter, whether it's MMA or whether it's boxing, whatever, slowly breaking down the opposition, finding the way to score the points they need to, and then finishing the fight. And I just think that innate skill is something that I have a much better understanding, and also the fitness as well.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I just, no matter how hard I tried, I couldn't get fit enough for it either. And that's mental.
Well, one of the things we've referenced boxing a lot through this chat and and how boxers sometimes move into MMA. So we're coming off the back of a weekend which Blake really has no interest in talking about YouTubers fighting.
Oh, why are you bringing this up?
What I'm interested in is, off the back of that, we saw what appeared to be quite a troubled Oscar De La Hoya saying that he's making a comeback over the weekend. And what we're seeing is lots of mixed martial artists or retired mixed martial artists fighting retired boxers. We're also seeing Mike Tyson come back and fight Roy Jones Jr. I just wonder what your thoughts are on this new kind of hybrid of these big money events. Well, not so much the YouTubers, but I guess a lot of the UFC fighters are now seeing money in that. So they're all calling out this fella that fought at the weekend, and then obviously the Oscar De La Hoya thing, which was quite not very nice to see. You know, for such an icon, you know, why are they, what's drawing these people back to fight? Is it just money? And if it is that enough of a reason for them fights to happen? Like, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I know. I think what's drawing them back is the glory and the moment and the adrenaline. I've experienced it in the most brief moment, and it was extraordinary. It was one of the most adrenaline-fueled, visceral experiences of my life. If that's your career, and then suddenly you have to turn it off, you can see why so many of these fighters and so many sportsmen struggle massively, because they lose a huge part of their life. And so I totally understand why they would want to try and get that back. They would try and relive that moment. They would try and get back to that glory, because there is nothing like it. I mean, it really is remarkable. And if you've been hailed as a hero by tens of thousands of people and made a good living out of it as well, regardless of putting yourself on the line physically, it's incredibly seductive, the idea of doing that one last time. You know, I watched the Mike Tyson, Roy Jones
junior fight and was a bit sort of like, oh, what's it going to be like? I don't want to see these icons fighting in a way that wasn't impressive. And actually, if you take away the fact, you think about how old they are now and what they were doing, it wasn't too bad in the end. You know, it was kind of like, yeah, you know, they've got themselves really fit for this. I've seen worse, you know, fights that have been professional bouts where somebody is fighting someone who is nowhere near their standard. And that I struggle far more with. But I totally understand why they would want to do it. I worry because, you know, you just wonder if you're going back into the ring, how much are you compromising physically by having to do that? But the idea of trying to recapture that moment of glory and that moment to sort of, you know, put yourself on the line, you know, why do I, me and Lee and Blake's a lot younger than us, but why do we keep going back to Soccer Aid each year? You know, for the, and that's in a very relatively safe environment. I know.
Well, Lee just wants
really
to finally score a penalty, doesn't he? That's Lee's desperate to finally score a penalty.
I think if Lee could pass to one of his own teams, that would be a start. But you know, I think what it you were trying to capture that something, that essence of something that we've lost. I mean, and I totally get it. And there's a market for it as well. And these people have always traded on their profile and who they are. If the market wasn't there, they wouldn't be getting these opportunities. I think it has to come down to, can they be sanctioned safely and allowed to do it? And are they willing to put themselves in that sort of situation? It's not necessarily my bag. I'd still rather remember them as the icons that they were, fighting, you know, incredible world title fights or whatever fights. But I'm always interested to know and see it. I don't know if you've seen the Frank Bruno documentary actually on Sky. And it's fascinating sort of listening to Mike Tyson talk about how many demons he has. And he has far more demons out of the ring than in the ring. And it's essentially when he's in the ring, that's when the demons go away, even now to this day.
But one of the things that you touched on earlier, when you said that, you know, your vision was on point and you was, you know, you was in that moment. Mm. Now, one of the things I often say, like, when I spar is the only time that I don't have any stress, because it sounds stupid because there's someone trying to punch me, but it's because you're so in that moment that you can't worry about, oh God, did I get that bit of work done? Or did I? And it's like, you're just in that moment. And I think there's something beautiful about that.
Present. And as soon as you aren't, you get caught, you get clobbered and it, you know, it hurts. Everything's got to be ready. You've got to be able to defend yourself. You've got to be looking for an opening. You've got to be able to breathe. You've got to be able to cope with the barrage that's going to come your way. I think you're absolutely right. It's very addictive as well, isn't it? That part of it. And getting better at it is addictive.
Yeah.
You know, if you have a fight with someone and you win, like a spar with someone and you clearly win, that's addictive. I think it's always good to be testing yourself against people that are better, just to sort of remind you that, you know what, you're not quite as good as you think you are.
My mind still thinks I'm incredible, but my 47-year-old body reminds me quite regular that I'm not.
I think it's really easy to get those kind of deluded moments because, I mean, I haven't hit pads since the pandemic started, really, so over a year now. And I haven't rolled for way more than that. And I still have moments where I'm hitting the bag after watching a good fight going, oh, I could do a little spar. I could have a little. I'd be all right. I'd be fine, right? And Blake, you moron, you would get fucked up really badly. Please don't.
Yeah, I still play five-a-side on a Thursday night under the delusion that I will be able to walk the next.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight,
and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud. Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Stay, and I really can't. And each week I wake up on a Friday morning, and I work very early on Friday morning, and I've usually got into bed by 10 o'clock. Had a lovely run around. Don't get me wrong, it's not competitive. It's good fun, this fight aside. And I wake up on that, and I really struggle to get my socks on because my body needs to warm up. And yet I'll still be back there next Thursday, sort of going, Mike, come on, this is the week. It's going to be amazing this week. And Friday morning will come around and go, God, why did I do that last night? And it's amazing, isn't it? Time heals everything. And as soon as you get to the following week, it's like, right, this week I'm going to really be like Ronaldo. It's all going to happen this week. It's all going to come together.
Well, when you...
But I'm like the fat Ronaldo from Brazil, unfortunately.
He was good still. I think that's all right, mate.
Yeah.
You could get the special haircut where you just leave the front quiff and shave the rest of it. That'd be a good look for...
That's about the only thing I can do now. Yeah. That's the problem.
There's one other thing I wanted to mention to you, Ben. We never really talk about other sports, other than obviously we dip into boxing every now and then because it's a combat sport. But we've had some interesting news today, and I don't know when this is going to go out, but all about that. And I know you're a huge football fan, and you obviously were goals on Sunday and all that kind of stuff as well. And obviously today they've announced this whole European Super League thing. I don't know a huge amount about it, other than there's about five British clubs or English clubs that are involved, along with other big, you know, AC Milan's, Real Madrid's, Atletico Madrid, Barcelona and all of that. Do you have any thoughts on this European Super League and whether you think it's a good idea or a bad idea?
It's definitely, it's a good idea for those clubs from a business perspective. I mean, it's guaranteed hundreds of millions of income at the detriment to the domestic football game, really. I think it genuinely is taking sport to the point where it is purely business now, it's purely money. Whereas I think we'd like to think that the way football is structured, particularly in this country, it is about the fans and it is the heart of the country. It's the biggest sport in the world, it's the biggest sport in this country. And it feels like these clubs have got together and all they're thinking about is how they can look after themselves. They're not thinking about the football pyramid. They're not thinking about all the clubs few divisions below that get money because it feeds down through. They're literally going, right, we're all right. We're going to go off. We're going to do this over here. And the rest of you can do what you like because we're just going to make super matches, big, giant European matches every week. And it's heartbreaking. I think sort of lots of I'm a West Ham fan. So West Ham are suddenly fourth in the Premier League. We're suddenly having an amazing season. Leicester, again, having a really good season. You know, two of the clubs that aren't actually in the top six at the moment. And they would go to this league. And you kind of feel like it seems like a very American model, yeah. You know, bit like a franchise, no relegation, no promotion. Everybody's protected. It feels like you just get home fans at each game because why would you travel towards the end of the season if there's nothing on the line to go to Atletico Madrid if you're a Chelsea fan? I mean, you want to go and see them, but, you know, if you're going every week and there's nothing in it, it's not like a big Champions League night. Think about how exciting those European Cup nights are, if you're lucky enough to be in them. I think it's really dangerous. It's a really dangerous precedent that they can set. I think the fact that the government's reacting and everybody is up in arms about it, they understand. And more importantly as well, you know, we're just going through a pandemic where clubs and fans are desperate to get back to be in the stands. People have been furloughed. Staff members have lost their jobs. And
to make a big move like this that is just about protecting themselves from a business perspective in such a sort of excessively greedy way just really jars.
Yeah.
It really, really jars with sort of the essence of what football is. And football has always been very much a working class sport. I mean, obviously that's changed as the money's come into it. And we've all enjoyed the sort of the global scale of it from a business perspective, and everybody has benefited. But there's part of that that is lost by this. The soul gets ripped out when it ends up becoming this European Super League.
Yeah.
You know, who knows whether it will eventually happen. But I think that the clubs may have underestimated how the fans will feel about it, because my friends that are Spurs fans or Chelsea fans or City fans who adore their club, it wasn't that long ago that Manchester City were
absolutely
in League One, you know, and then they suddenly got the benefit of being bought by this family that had a lot of money. And, you know, I saw a tweet from a very good friend of mine that's a big City fan, and he said, yeah, I've gone from absolutely adoring my club, they could do nothing wrong, to really questioning why they would do this. You know, I think they've underestimated the feeling that the fans will have. And someone mentioned that, I think it was a couple of seasons ago, Liverpool raised the season ticket price. And at a certain point during one of the home games, all the fans walked out. And as soon as they did that, they changed the season ticket price. I think I might be right by saying this. And that was the power that they had. The club reacted to what the fans had done. And I think that they need to be very careful about understanding how the fans feel about this, particularly now. It's just really distasteful during the pandemic.
Yeah, well, it looks like there's a UEFA getting involved now. I just seen something flash up on my phone a little while ago from The Independent saying that a UEFA member has claimed that Chelsea, Real Madrid and Manchester City are going to be kicked out of the Champions League. I don't know whether that's actually going to happen. It's what a UEFA member has actually stated. I don't know why those three clubs have been picked out in particular, or if others will be added on top of
it. They're the three. So the semi-final is PSG, Real Madrid, Chelsea and, say, Liverpool. Man City. That's the semi-final of the Champions League. The only one of those teams in the semi-final that isn't part of this European Super League is PSG. So the other three are part of this breakaway league. So that's why they'll have said, you know, if they're going to do it, there's going to be sanctions. And that's the thing. Lots of people calling for points deductions in the Premier League. Maybe they get thrown out of the Champions League. But they need to come. It feels like they need to sort of make a serious statement. The governing bodies, politicians, all those people need to make a serious statement, because it's been hanging around this for a long time. People have been talking about it.
Mm.
But PSG didn't go for it. None of the German clubs go for it, because the German clubs, I think, are still 51% owned by the fans.
Yep.
So the governance is different. So you've just got Spanish clubs, a few British clubs, English clubs, and the Italian clubs. But it's guaranteed income. You know, they're businesses. They're run by CEOs. They're not run by fans. So.
And you say American model, and, you know, we've got a lot of American owners now.
Yes. Yeah, exactly that. Exactly that. And all they're looking at is the bottom line. And if they get more money, then they can get better players. They get better players, then the profile of the club goes up globally. But to the detriment of the fan base in their home country, I don't know.
There you go.
Well, the only possible outcome would be some of these incredible footballers are going to end up calling out Jake Paul, and there'll be it'll all be settled in a scrap.
That's how they'll do it. Settle it in the octagon.
Oh, Ronaldo versus Jake Paul. I put my money on Ronaldo. He will boot him into next week.
Wonderful. Ben, thanks so much for your time today, mate. I really appreciate you coming on and being a guest and talking.
My pleasure. MMA. I've really enjoyed it. Stu, it's nice
thanks
to meet you.
Thanks very much, Ben.
Blake, lovely to see you as ever, friend.
Cheers, mate. Yeah, you too. It's been a blast. Thanks, man.
Thanks, Ben.
Top stuff. Cheers, boys.
There you go. Ben Shepherd. What an absolutely delightful man.
Yep, that was brilliant. I love Ben. Such a nice guy. One thing we didn't mention, I think he's the only ever person to get sent off during a Soccer Aid game. So he likes a bit of violence, does Ben? lovely, lovely chatting with him. It was great to hear that he enjoyed it. Great to hear that he watched it with his sons as well, and that they were really into it. So we've got another fighter from our fight or flight tests that we've done a few of now. And an actual fighter.
I
mean, that was amazing that he's actually stepped in the boxing ring and done it. I mean, people have heard my thoughts on the whole Jake Paul nonsense. But I think if you're doing something for charity and you're stepping in there with someone of your level,
yeah,
then that is great. You know, raise money for charity, do that. I know that there's a bunch of, what do they call it, like white collar or blue collar?
Yeah, white collar.
Yeah, so and they're raising money for charity. I'm all for that. That is brilliant. Fight someone at your level for charity, brilliant. Just don't go calling yourself a fighter and calling out real fighters because it looks ridiculous. But let's move on from that. Very happy to have had Ben on the show. I think he was a fantastic laugh. And nice to throw in that little bit about the European Super League there as well, because, you know, it's quite big news when we're recording it. I don't know when this episode's going to be out, when you'll be listening to it. Maybe it's been a few weeks and that's all been resolved and sorted. But it was such big news. And I know Ben is a huge football fan, has presented some big football shows as well. So I thought I'd get that in there. But we won't be making a habit of talking about non-MMA based sports on this show. It was just something that seemed very poignant at the time.
I think one of the other, I mean, just to touch on that quickly as well, one of the things that surprised me most about this chat was the fact that, obviously, you know, Ben, through Soccer Aid, the then conversation towards the end turned onto football, yet no mention of your penalty. So that was probably the first episode where we've not actually touched on that, which was delightful.
We can go over it now if you want, mate. I mean, I can take you through it blow by blow. Should we do an episode that's just the Blake Harrison penalty? What he felt like stepping up, how he felt when he had to kick that ball, the elation afterwards. Oh, God.
There we go. But I do think that what we're seeing time and time again on these fight or flights is that kind of crossover of that instant comparison to boxing. You know, it's just like, well, I love my boxing, but I've, you know, and I've dabbled in watching a bit of MMA. And I think that is, you know, and I find it really interesting because that was my route in, but it wasn't yours. So I find that's quite interesting.
Yes.
You know, it was, you know, a lot of people as well have kind of sort of get into it through wrestling. And watching like the WWF. I know Pip's a huge wrestling fan, and when we spoke to him, I know that he's still a you know a big wrestling fan. But when I look at, especially after sort of going to a UFC event, and for someone that's been to lots of big boxing events, they're always all right. You know, I've seen big fights at the O2, but then I've also been to UFC at the O2, and not that I've ever been to a wrestling event, but it feels to me that UFC's kind of production approach to events and the way that it's put together definitely draws from wrestling as well. There's something really fun and exciting, and it just has got lots of sort of pizzazz, for want of a bad word, to describe it, whereas boxing just still feels... it hasn't got that about it when you go and watch a boxing event. Most people at boxing fights turn up for the main fight, don't even bother for the undercard, whereas UFC, you know, most people are there for at least, you know, minimum the main card, you know, so they're there for five fights, and I like that. It feels like more of an event, you know, and it also feels like it's not a kind of thing where, like, it's just like, right, we're going to go out on the piss and then we're going to go and watch, you know, Frosch versus Kessler or whatever. It's like, right, well, we'll go there, we'll have something, we'll have a couple of drinks, and then let's go and get stuck in and watch the whole card. I find that is more what I imagine a wrestling kind of production to be about. A little bit more family-based, a little bit more, I guess, I've got to be careful how I say this, but a little bit less testosterone. And it feels like martial artists... sometimes, you know, I find that going to UFC events feels a lot less intimidating sometimes than going to boxing events. You know, I've been to lots of boxing events where there's been trouble in the crowds and things like that, where people have like been there supporting. And this is smaller shows supporting fighters that are fighting, and it's got ugly in the, you know, in the arena and things like that. Whereas UFC just doesn't feel like that for me. It feels like a much more kind of welcoming and safer environment to just sit and enjoy watching, you know, some great fights. Do you know where I'm trying to go with this, Blake?
Maybe, but what I would wonder is, where are you sat for all of those things? Because that could be a thing. Because I'd imagine that, you know, you're hanging on Pip's coattails and, you know, getting really these was. Getting these freebies where you're sat cage side. And you're like, oh, isn't it so lovely? Everyone's just so marvellous here. Oh, they're wearing their top hats and monocles sitting cage side at the fights. And then with the boxing, you've probably just like gone with one of your random mates and you're sat up in the god somewhere and it's all kicking off because everyone's doing blow in the toilets or something and going mad.
When I did see Frosch Kessler, I was on the back row.
There you go. So that's
watch
what it is.
Watch it on a screen, just sitting next to blokes going, well, what he, like, massive fucking 50-year-old fat blokes going, what he needs to do now. If he hit him, like, I know you just think, oh, shut up, mate. And like, I did not come here for your commentary. But you're probably exactly right. Yeah, every UFC event I have blagged in with Pip and had very nice seats.
Well, I the only boxing event I went to live was Hay versus someone I can't even remember. I took my dad and my brother for, I think it was my dad's birthday or something. And my dad used to box in the army and stuff. So he's a big boxing fan and he always liked watching boxing when we were kids and we'd watch a little bit of it or whatever. But we were sat, I think, quite far back for that. I think it might have been like maybe Hayes' first heavyweight fight or something like that. After he was at cruiserweight, he moved up to heavyweight, fought like a couple of lower level guys to build up towards his title fights and that. And I can tell you now, I remember nothing about it. I remember nothing about it. But you say to me, Gustafsson Manoa or Till Masvidal or any of the other ones I've been to, even some Bama events where like I didn't know the fighters, but I remember a couple of things about it and enjoying it. But the majority of those, I was sat in much better seats.
Yeah.
Bisping Silva was my favorite one. I was at Bisping Silva as well, which was incredible. But those fights, I remember it. And I was sat there to watch the whole thing. Rather than just turn up for the main event. And people do still just turn up for like the last couple of fights, but I wonder if it is less. But I haven't got enough experience of being kind of ringside or watching boxing fights live as much as I do MMA fights, where I will park myself there for the first prelim and then just watch the entire card. And I'm timing my loo breaks a la John Gooden running through everywhere. I love it. But I can't compare it to boxing enough because I've not had enough experience of that. And I'm not as interested in it.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll tell you one thing that I always wish they'd put on the TV side of UFC. And you can watch it on YouTube if you've never been to a UFC event and watched it. But in between the prelims and the main card, they shut the lights down in the arena and you hear and then the Who track plays Barbara O'Reilly. And then literally this montage of like every UFC hero like walking out to the octagon to that huge sounding like Who record. And then you've just got loads of Rogan talking over the top of it. It's so well put together. And it's that bow, bow, bow. And then as soon as the drums come in, you'll just see, like, more than likely Connor drop Aldo. And you'll just hear this, like, Rogan going, wow! And it's like, and then it's just highlight, knockout for, like, the duration of this song. And all of the screens around the arena are playing it. I've got goosebumps literally talking about it. And they don't put it on the telly. And I just think, it's so good. It fires you up. Do you know? Have you seen it? Do you know what I'm talking about?
I can't really remember it. No, I mean, I probably have seen it multiple times, but I can't really remember it. I'm probably there with my brother just like tweeting or looking around or going, this is a good time to go to the toilet.
Right, I'm going to send it to you when we're done because it's so good. It's like, imagine getting a Rocky training montage and just pumping it full of steroids and caffeine and just making it bigger and huger and more absolutely, it just sets you on fire. So I'm going to send it over to you. And, listeners, if you've not seen it, go on YouTube and just put Barbara O'Reilly, The Who, UFC, because it will blow your socks off. They update it every once in a while. The first one, you just see Connor in the tunnel, just ready to come out. Then you just see Ronda with her fight face on, ready to come out. And then you'll say, who always sprints to the arena?
Cormier?
Cormier, then you just see DC running, and it's like, oh, so good. I can't believe you don't remember it, Blake. Unbelievable. All right, well, look, I guess we've witted on... well, I've just witted on for about 5 minutes about UFC production.
You really have, yeah.
what yous can't see is Blake's doing the TV thing of just, like, wind it up. Come on, mate. if he had a little soundtrack, like an awards thing, he'd just be fading it in there. Just shut me up.
Well, we have Glitter... That song has been going on for the last, like, 10 minutes.
That's a very good point, of course. Yeah. Oh, dear. Well, look, we're back next time. Like we said, I don't think we're 100% sure what day we're going to put this one out yet, so we can't really tell you what's next. But what we can tell you is what episodes you've missed out on if this was your first time listening. So who we had on so far, Blake?
Oh, my God, we've had on Arnold Allen, Nathaniel Wood, Molly McCann, Brad Pickett, and then we've had a lovely chat with Brian Lacey and Scroobius Pip recently. Looking forward to 261. That's probably long gone by now, isn't it?
Yep.
That's old news, that. And then there was Emily Head, Laura Checkley, Lee Mack, John Gooden. Oh, have I missed anyone out? I hope I haven't missed anyone out.
Paddy the Baddy.
Paddy the Baddy! How can I miss out, Paddy? Oh, I didn't miss you out, Paddy. I was saving you for the end, mate. The big crescendo. So we've had some great ones that you can check out. A lot of those interviews are relatively timeless as well, because we on this show don't speak overly about upcoming fights or fights that have just gone. We like to really get into the mindset of these fighters, discuss how they are with weight cuts, their kind of mentality, their mental toughness, any kind of problems they've had in their life that have led to them needing to kind of really dig deep into get their mental strength going. It's stories that hopefully will inspire you as listeners as well. So those interviews, if you're looking at something, you go, oh, well, that interview was 2 months ago or whatever, it still can be a great listen, because it's not about something that happened 2 months ago. It's about them, their career as a fighter, and how they get through the tough times and all that kind of stuff. So check those out as well.
Absolutely. And to ensure that you don't miss anything moving forward, the best thing you can do is subscribe. Subscribe on whatever platform you listen to your podcasts on. We're on all the socials, Instagram, Facebook and Twitter. So give us a follow over there. Drop us a message. Let us know if there's any fighters you'd love to hear us talk to, any celebrities you'd like to hear us do Fight or Flight episodes with. Any kind of feedback and chit-chat is more than welcome. Drop us a message on the socials. Like I say, subscribe, and we'll be back soon, right?
We will.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye. Is that your phone going off?